Greetings, 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 my friends, family, and others. Welcome to another episode of Bard's Rise. I am your host, Michael Dean. Today's episode is entitled Relationships and Third Rails. There's a slide deck hanging on the show page. If you're interested, you're welcome to follow along. That's why I put it up there. You can also refer back to it at a later time if you feel the need and are so inspired. So first, some housekeeping. This goes to synchronicities. I recently saw a post that Elon Musk retweeted on X. The original post talks about how the only way to restore the rule of the people in America is to impeach judges. Activist judges must be removed from the bench or there is no justice. I spoke about that a few shows ago. And that and a couple of other things, it looks like synchronicity is certainly happening. And I'm very excited about it. Also, more synchronicity. I talked about how, at least here in New York, the court system has a custom and practice, an official policy of violating the First and Second Amendment rights of thousands, if not tens and hundreds of thousands of people across the state. And wouldn't you know it, Pam Bondi announced that she's establishing a task force on both First Amendment rights and the Second Amendment rights. I love the synchronicity. Next issue. I'm sure everybody's seen the red and white Make America Great Again hats, right? The red and white, and sometimes different colors. And there's some on the right side. You have the numbers 45-47. Some people pronounce that as 45 and 47. I submit to you that the proper term for that would be 45 through 47, not 45 and 47. If you don't know what I'm referring to, please do some research. And finally, some more housekeeping. There is a post on Rumble under the Il Donaldo Trumpo account entitled America is Back, Baby. And in it, there's a picture. And from what I can tell, there are seven American flags. Not a single one has gold fringe. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. If not, again, you need to do a little research. Well, I suggest you do it. What you decide to do is up to you. Oh, I'm sorry. Another shout out. Two actually remaining. And both of them are by Laura Abeley. Laura, forgive me if I pronounced that wrong. I apologize deeply. So Laura has a post where she's talking about how many of us tried to figure out what we could do to accelerate the change and to help with awakening people and tearing down the matrix. And one of the paragraphs says, and I wish I could write like this, and I had these words, but she describes what my goal is in Bard's Rising perfectly in this one sentence and trying to get people to do this. So when you find yourself feeling frustrated with the situation and wanting to do something about it, just know that every small act of defiance, every word of truth, every informed choice, every act of courage, and every step you take in the right direction is helping all of us get there. And that would be awakening and destroying the matrix. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Laura, for such eloquent and cogent and really words that are so apropos at this time. Thank you. And finally, there's also by Laura, there's a post where there's a young man with a beard who talks about how the USDA and Secretary Brooke Rollins has announced a portal for farmers, ranchers, and producers who are being harassed by federal or state agencies to go to this portal, explain the situation, and they'll come out and help resolve it. I mean, more synchronicity, as well as a shout out. Thank you, thank you, thank you to the USDA and Secretary Rollins. This gentleman recommended that we also add NGOs, because they, I guess, are prominent in giving the landowners out there a hard time. So all the best to them in attaining that goal. But that's exactly what I've been saying that BLM should do with respect to land patents. If you have an issue with enforcing your land patent and somebody's not respecting it, including the local sheriff, there should be a number or an office, a portal for the BLM. You submit your complaint and they send people out to resolve it. Just like the Department of Labor does for USERRA, the Uniformed Servicemen's Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. So thank you to all of those. Oh, goodness. I need to look at my slide deck. Two more shout outs. This is a banner week. There's two individuals out in California who were interviewed, and they talk about how California is not lost because they're out there trying to raise the curtain on government tyranny and helping to wake people up. So kudos on you, gentlemen. Slave to Liberty and Luke Slywaker. Go get him. And then finally, this beautiful young gal, Timber Turkey, on Instagram. She talks about how she refuses to be a victim and she actually goes jogging with a firearm, a handgun, strapped to her chest. And there's a picture of her standing in her running gear with her firearm strapped to her chest. You go, girl. I would love to have lunch or coffee with you for a day. Talk about a warrior. God bless you. You go, girl. All right. So, turning to today's topic, relationships. I've decided to approach this through personal experience and give you an idea of my journey because it will cover a lot of ground that I think is really important for people to understand. Not just adults, but also teenagers. They need to understand the different types of people out there. Some of us are different levels of awakening. Some of us can just feel the energy in others. Some of us not so much, so they need a little more help. So, I've also talked about relationship models in my past shows, and I've talked about the two examples of monogamy and polygamy, and I use the eagles and the lion pride as examples of each one, and trying to figure out which one is, quote, I guess the correct one or the proper one, the one that's resonates more, because there's, pluses and minuses for both of them. And then it dawned on me that there's a third option. Next slide shows a pack of wolves. Wolves are monogamous, yet they live in very large groups. And I'm all about large families. And there's a leader for, I'd say administrative purposes, but he respects and protects every single member of the pack. And there's a huge, intricate social structure within the pack. And the next slide, eight, will shows you how that breaks out when they travel. The three in the front of the pack, those are the older members of the pack, and they set the pace. And the whole pack defers to them to protect them so that they don't get overwhelmed. Right behind them is another group of the strongest members of the pack. And they're there to protect not just the older group, but also the group that's right behind them, which consists of the younger members of the pack, who are not as strong. And behind them is another group of strong adults. And then finally, all the way at the end is the alpha male, where it's a strategic position where he can react to anything that may be going on. So, love, love, love the social structure of the wolves. Okay, slide nine, relationships. There's a thing out there, a syndrome called the Madonna whore syndrome, and typically refers to guys who want to marry the Madonna style female, but they secretly desire the whore. Whether that's true or not, and whether it applies to an individual, I couldn't care less. But I'm here to tell you, it's not just for the guys. That applies to women as well. They want to present themselves as pure and innocent and all good and all that. But meanwhile, as soon as they turn the corner or close the door, the whore comes out. I assure you, it's a real thing. Whether it's right or wrong, Whether that's good or bad, that's not for me to decide. That's for you all to decide. But my point is that you need to be open about it, because not everybody wants to be affiliated or associated with that type of behavior. So, on a family vacation, I finally figured out after over 16 years of marriage that my now ex-wife was bisexual. And that was quite shocking because it was beyond me. The signals were there, going back, yes, red flags all over the place, but I just never believed that it was here, right? That happened somewhere else to somebody else, not me. I was wrong. And then I discovered, next slide, 10, that she was also into polyamory, which is more than one relationship, more than one people simultaneously. And I started getting into that because I had to understand these lifestyles. It was just foreign to me. And the more I studied, the more I figured out it really is a thing. They call it the life, living the life. And there's actually a book on it. It's out at the time, there was a third edition entitled The Ethical Slut. And you may disagree with this lifestyle, and I do as well. But these authors, I have total, complete, and utter respect for them, because in this book, they specifically say what I feel, that it's not for everybody, that the one basic rule for that lifestyle, at least those who practice it, quote, ethically, is that nobody gets hurt, that they're open about their relationship, and they don't enter into committed relationships without disclosing to their partner or partners that this is what they're all about. And that I can respect. I disagree with their lifestyle. I wouldn't want to be involved in an intimate relationship with them, but I respect them for being honest and authentic. Whether you do agree with me or not, I mean, it's up to you. You make your own choice. But I found that entirely refreshing. And it just made me realize how much out of the norm, what an outlier my relationship was. And then from there, I discovered that she was also a sex addict. And I discovered that there's a 12-step program for sex addicts. I mean, I've heard about it briefly, but who pays attention to that kind of thing? And not only did I find discover it, but I decided I need to understand this. So I started going to meetings, Essanon. And there were only two guys there, including myself. The other guy hardly showed up regular. And in the beginning, I did, but after a while, I just faded away because it wasn't doing anything. You just sat there and talked about the same thing. And there was no resolution. Like Q says, where's the 13th step finality where it's over and you're cured and you walk away? There is no end. It's just a perpetual ongoing thing. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but if that's what you're into and you find yourself you need support, there is support out there for you. From discovering all of this sexual, oriented behavior or misbehavior, however you choose to label it, I discovered narcissists, slide 12, and what that meant and what it's like to deal with one, live with one. And they say the best thing to do is to go no contact. Well, how can I go no contact? She's the mother of my two children. I can't just walk away. I wanted to, but I had to go back for the children looking down the road. And thank goodness I did. So once I discovered narcissism, then I discovered cluster Bs. On slide 13, there's a snippet, right? A screenshot from a website entitled Healthline. And it talks about how there are three main clusters of personality disorders: cluster A, cluster B, and cluster C. Cluster B is what I want to focus on because that's where the demons hang out, as far as I'm concerned. And it's not just me. So, cluster B, there are four types of personality disorders: antisocial, borderline, histrionic, and narcissistic. Antisocial, that's another way of saying a sociopath. Borderline got its name from the individual being on the borderline of psychosis or psychotic. Psychosis is when people have loss of reality for long periods of time, several months, even years. Borderline is when they have short breaks from reality, a few hours, maybe a day or two. They lose touch with reality. It's pretty serious. Histrionic, that tends to be, from my understanding of the literature, very more prominent in females. And then finally, narcissistic, right? Control freaks, and it can get really ugly. There are several women that are diagnosed. The percentages are not too far off. If memory serves, only about 15% of men get diagnosed. The percentage of men versus women that have narcissistic personality disorder is only about 15% higher in men than it is in women. So I know a lot of focus out there is on men being narcissists, but hold on, the ladies aren't far behind. So on slide 14, another screenshot from another website, Psychology Today, and it talks about cluster B personality disorders. And it says that about 10% of adults have some type of personality disorder, and about 4.5% have cluster B disorders. Think about that. Out of every 100 people that you know, 4 to 5 of them have one of those personality disorders. And when I say have them, according to the mental health professionals, right, they could be like officially, professionally diagnosed with that. And we'll get into the criteria of diagnosis in a little bit. This screenshot also says it is helpful to know that there is no medication for treating personality disorders at this time. And this article was published in June 25th, 2022. I don't think this type of medication was high on their list. But yeah, it's serious stuff, these four anyway. So let's get into the official, I guess, criteria. And let me just say that the reason why I'm going into this, right, when talking about relationships and third rails is because I learned, it's kind of like when I was a second lieutenant, right? They were trying to teach us about leadership. And they said leadership and finding good examples is kind of like hard to describe. Sometimes it's helpful to describe what it is not and distinguish that. Kind of like for any game, soccer, football, baseball, whatever. You point out the out of bounds, right? Where are the boundaries? Where's the playing field? Okay, outside of there is no good. Inside this line, this is what you can do. That's what I'm trying to get at here with identifying some of these personality disorders. And I don't want to get into a lot of detail. But it's just something that you should be aware of. So on slide 15, I have a copy of the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It's basically, quote, the Bible for mental health practitioners. And I put specific diagnoses out there, right? I copied and paste, or I scanned a few of the pages for those specific cluster B disorders. And I put them in here not so that you can review them to diagnose or try and diagnose an individual. I put these in here to give you an awareness of what to look for. These are considered, to me, red flag traits. And you'd be surprised how many of them seem pretty, I guess, pretty intuitive when you read about it. But in your everyday life, you're not thinking about it. But if you're in a relationship where something just seems off, like it doesn't make sense, I encourage you to just take a look at this, and see if certain traits jump out at you. And that the way I used this was an encouragement to say, yep, this is wrong. It's a bad relationship. I can't believe I've been here for essentially over 18 years with this woman, right? And when I got through all of this and I saw just how bad, how many of these traits she had displayed consistently over an 18-year relationship, intimate relationship, I realized that I was a saint. Maybe not official from the church or anybody else, but for me to be able to put up with all that for as long as I did and not, take on her characteristics or lash out in any way, yeah, I was pretty stable and I was pretty happy with myself. So here we go. The first one, antisocial personality disorder. You have to have three or more of the following criteria, and there are seven listed, right? The capital letters, you need to meet all of those. But of the numbered criteria, you need to have three or more in order to be diagnosed. Again, don't read this for diagnosis. Read this for awareness, familiarization with what to look out for. Well, FYI, my ex had five. Sociopath. Next, borderline, slide 17. Again, this, you need five of the following criteria, and there are nine listed. Number two, right? Another way of saying that you'll see in some of the other literature is called black and white thinking. There's no in between. There's no third option. Either you're in it all the way or you hate them. And a perfect classic example, and I went round and round with this with my ex. I can't tell you how many times she would say, "You hate gays. You hate gays." I say, "No, I just don't understand them. I don't agree with the lifestyle, but I don't hate them." And then, it was a third option. So for her, the only way of looking at it is you're either with us or with them and you agree with it and you're engaged and you're doing it, you're living that lifestyle, or you hate us. There's no third option. Black and white thinking. And that's summarized over here. Another way of putting it is number two for that trait. My ex had all nine criteria. For borderline, there's also help that you can try and seek out. For this, NAMI, NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. They have an affiliation with, I believe, Yale, which is not too far from where I am. And they held groups, like an annual seminar and stuff, and they talk about it. And this one mental health practitioner talked about it, and she said one of her clients was this beautiful woman. She could have been a model. I think she might have even been a model. She was about 5'10, 5'11, beautiful figure, long, straight brown hair, absolute borderline. And she knew it. Multiple people diagnosed her with it. And the mental health practitioner asked this woman what it was like having borderline personality disorder. And she said, and she used her hands to, to show her. She said, from here to here, indicating like from her waist up to the top of her chest, is a cavernous void that can swallow me up at any time. These people are very unstable. They're just emotionally. Remember, my ex would literally shake for like an entire day sometimes and just say things that were incoherent. Very, very disturbing. Next slide, number 19, is a slide, and again, a clip from the internet of Father Chad Ripperger. He established a he's a Catholic priest. I know some of you are saying, "Oh, Catholicism," but hold on. He established a society within the church for exorcists so that they could get together, share notes, and help like do the exorcism, which is not uncommon. I mean, everyday people do that now, as long as they're connected to the spiritual realm. But yeah, they can do it. It's not limited exclusively to priests, but he's affiliated with the priesthood. And just keep in mind, next slide 20, that light beings have joined as participated with the Catholic Church. And one example would be the incorrupt body of Saint Bernadette Subirus, who, according to a post from For the People, was raw. She brought so much light into that body that that body is now incorruptible. So just because he's a member of the church doesn't mean he's wrong. I believe he has a good heart, maybe misguided as far as, what the truth is, but he's one of those people that are in the system, maybe doesn't realize what's going on, but he has a good heart. I believe that. Okay, continuing with third rails, histrionic personality disorder. There are eight criteria. You need five or more of these in order to be diagnosed with this disorder. My ex had six. And then finally, narcissistic personality disorder. You need five or more of the nine that are listed here. My ex had seven. Going back to Father Rochford, I should have mentioned when in one of his videos, the reason why I put him in here and I put him after the borderline personality disorder slide is because in one of his videos, he said that he believed that borderline personality disorder was in fact demonic possession because medication doesn't work. And I've pointed that out in one of the previous slides up there, right? According to one of the websites. And then I believe in one of another of his videos, I'm not 100% on this, but I want to say that he also said he expanded it to all cluster Bs. Either way, he definitely said borderline personality disorder. So it's not just me. Borderline personality disorder is really bad stuff. All of them are. And that's why I'm bringing it to your attention. So once we get through these four third rail diagnoses, there's something that you should know, especially if you find yourself in more than one relationship with these type of people. Codependency. At its core, codependency disorder is like a chameleon of the emotional world, adapting and shifting its appearance depending on the relationship it inhabits. It's a pattern of behavior where one person excessively relies on another for approval and a sense of identity. Picture a tightrope walker constantly adjusting their balance to avoid falling. That's the codependent, forever attuned to the needs and moods of others, often at the expense of their own well-being. And it goes on to talk about, give you more details about codependency, and I encourage you to pull the slides and read those. It is helpful. Something else. So codependency is not an official diagnosis within the DSM-5. However, there is something that's closely related, and that's dependent personality disorder. DPD, dependent personality disorder, is perhaps the closest relative to codependency in the DSM-5. Both involve an excessive need to be taken care of and difficulty making decisions independently. However, DPD is more about a pervasive pattern of submissive and clinging behavior, while codependency often involves a more complex dance of caretaking and control. Codependency also shares some common ground with anxiety and mood disorders. Okay. And then the next slide, 25, I put in there dependent personality disorder from the DSM-5 and list some of the criteria for that. However, I strongly encourage you to go and do some research on codependency. You'll be surprised. I had an off-the-cuff conversation with a dear friend of mine, and she was like, "Well, what are you talking about, codependency?" And she went, she looked at it, and she's like, "You know what? There's something here." And she went into it, and she found it very helpful. So, if you need it, hopefully it will be helpful to you. On slide 26, I put in there six screenshots from CLS of different clearings that address this. Right, that previous slide talked about how dependency or codependency. Talked related to anxiety and emotional issues. Well, you have the anxiety body clearing, the extreme anxiety release clearing, depression release clearing, emotional body clearing, codependency courting release clearing, and then finally the discernment renewal clearing. I thought those more were most apropos to our topic for today. Because if you can discern who's or what somebody is, that should help you. Okay. Now we move on. That was the DSM-5, and that was the official diagnosis. And again, I emphasize, read those slides, those criteria, not to diagnose somebody, but for familiarity, right? Of red flags. Well, There's a gentleman called Dr. Robert D. Hare. He's a forensic psychologist up in Canada, and he came up with a checklist. He said, look, that may be good and well, right? I'm paraphrasing here, but it's not very useful. They're not very pragmatic for day-to-day diagnoses, especially in a correctional facility environment. So he came up with, according to my understanding, this term psychopaths, right? And he wanted to, I guess, try and figure out in a layman's way or in a pragmatic way of how to diagnose these people. And it's something that I thought was very, very influential. Is psychopaths view any social exchange as a feeding opportunity, a contest or a test of wills in which there can be only one winner. Their motives are to manipulate and take ruthlessly and without remorse. You will not find the term psychopath in the DSM-5. Okay, so understand that. However, he did come up with a checklist, which is on slide 28. There are 20 questionnaires, and you can rate them either definitely not present, 0 points, somewhat present, 1 point, and definitely present, 2 points. Now, what's the distinction between definitely present or somewhat? I couldn't tell you. Does it have to be once a week, once a day, 5 times a day? Again, I don't know. I have a general sense of it. If it's, consistently, then yes, they should get at least 1 point. And some will just jump out at you and like, yes, absolutely, definitely present there on a routine basis, almost daily. So with this test, this is one of only two tests that can be taken for someone else and still be accurate. Usually in mental health, you have to diagnose the actual individual, right? And only a licensed, professional, qualified individual could do that, but not for this test. So this is another useful tool that you can pull out and check off, different red flags, different traits that are here, and see where your partner or the individual that you're concerned about falls. There has only been one perfect score of 40. He's serving multiple life sentences up in Canada. If you score 30 or higher, you are officially a psychopath. Less than 30, like the mid to high 20s, you're considered a corporate psychopath, sometimes referred to in the literature as a subcriminal psychopath. Let me ask you something. Even with the previous diagnosis, the DSM-5, it says that you need, I don't know, five out of the certain criteria. How would you like to live with somebody who only had four of those criteria? Or if you needed seven, only had six of the criteria? Do you think that would be conducive to a good relationship? Probably not. Well, same thing here. Above 30, yeah, you're off the charts. Run away. Mid to upper 20s, those are the people that are always causing problems at work, right? Somewhere, the church club, whatever it is, they always have to stir the pot. You want to be involved in a relationship with that type of person? Probably not. I didn't. My ex scored anywhere from a 28 to 32. I'm a saint. Okay, so that's a good background for you to consider. And this information, I mean, it took years for me to truly understand what was going on, to get my hands around it. So don't think that you're going to just read it like one day and all of a sudden everything's going to make sense to you. Different issues will arise as things go on. If you're in the beginning of a divorce process, just let things play out. Refer to this and know that a lot of us make the wrong decisions and you need to own up to it. Own it, observe it, let it pass and move on. It's not the end of the world. Trust me. Even if your kids are stolen from you. And as hard as that may be to swallow, it's not the end of the world. So, this obviously impacts, lands with me very deeply, which is why when I recently saw a video by this woman on slide 29, I have to read this to you, okay? She says, and she's, a relationship coach, or purports to be. In one of her clips, she says, "My desires are the North Star in our relationship. My husband puts my desires into his GPS and off we go in that direction. That becomes his purpose. My husband wants to be a hero. He's kind of bummed he couldn't be in World War II because he wasn't born yet. But he can fix my flat tire even though it's raining, or go to the store because I want a banana, or he can put the laundry away, or fix the TV streaming thing so that I can see my show. And then I'm delighted. And he might as well have gotten the Congressional Medal of Honor. That's how much he likes it. My job is to know what it is I desire, specifically, because without that, we're both stuck with nothing to put in the GPS." So I heard this, and this literally triggered me. I mean, it upset me because it is, talk about a throwback to my previous life. Narcissism is screaming from the screen for me. I'm like, I couldn't wait to get away from this woman, but I couldn't, right? I said, I'm going to use this as an example. And here she is giving people advice. Let's, on the next slide, 30, I break down some of her stuff, right? My desires, right? What about, so my desires are the North Star in our relationship. So she's creating timelines for her husband. He has no desires of his own, no timelines of his own. Everything's hitched to his wife. You kidding me? No sense of self, no independence for her husband. You think that's a mutually rewarding relationship? You think this person really should be giving advice or people should be listening to this woman? She needs approval from outs, or he needs approval from outside of himself. Doesn't seem like he's really firm. Sounds like he needs to do a lot of inner work. And then, because without that, we're both stuck with nothing to put in the GPS. Talk about narcissism. Oh my goodness. So anyway, the link to this one, a link to this one post on Project Review with Q is at the bottom. I encourage you to go and listen to it because it will help provide some information, some background on all of this. And it talks about really developing a healthy relationship. So in response to that woman's post, slide 31, I came up with. And I looked for a picture of a woman holding an umbrella for a guy changing a tire in the rain. I couldn't find one. The concept of a woman holding an umbrella for a guy as he's changing the tire is foreign to the internet. I couldn't believe it. This is the closest picture I could find. So much for being a team, right? She's out there doing her thing, watching him for moral support. But other than that, really not doing much else. The guy would probably look at her, at least what I would do is look at her, thank you very much, honey. I appreciate it. Even if she was holding an umbrella for me, right? And one for herself. I would tell her probably, I got it. Just go inside and start getting something warm to drink. That's all. But the fact that she offered to do it and she was out there dressed with the umbrellas in hand means the world to this guy, or would mean the world, at least to me. Instead of running to the store and fetching a banana for her, why don't you go together? He drives, you jump out, grab your banana, and he can go and grab some ice cream and chocolate syrup with nuts, and then you can have a banana split. Right? Why does it have to be only about you? And deciding who puts away the laundry, why not do rock, paper, scissors? Why does it have to be one person or the other? Make a chance. Or if the guy's out there chopping wood all day, do you really think that is it fair to ask him to come inside and also fold the laundry? I mean, what have you been doing all day inside? If you've been cooking all day inside while the laundry is going in the background, sure, I'm with you. But if you haven't been engaged all day like he has outside the house, it's a little unfair. And finally, your TV shows. What are you doing watching TV? Everybody knows it's programming. It's a bunch of crap. Why would you be involved with a woman who's watching TV? Why would you listen to advice from a woman who watches TV? I don't get it. No. Instead of listening to people like this, I prefer to take the lead from Q and Ra. And let's look at babies and dogs and see what they do. Slide 32. All kinds of pictures of little children, babies, hugging puppies and dogs. The puppies laying down next to, in fact, on the baby, right? Or an adult dog putting its head across the baby. Another one taking a blue blanket with stars on it and flipping it onto the baby, taking care of each other. Touch, touch, touch. Just innocent. Doesn't have to be sexual. Doesn't have to be romantic. Nothing. Just a simple, harmless touch will change the mood immensely. And proof of that is on the next slide. I'm partial to pickup trucks, so all of these have pickup trucks in them. But there's a woman sitting next to her guy driving, or sitting on his lap, laying across him, sitting next to him and taking one leg and flipping it over his leg. Something so simple. Reaching down and grabbing his hands as you lean over and give him a kiss. You don't have to have sex with him. Just be next to him. And it's not just me who gets this, right? And here's a lost art from my little view, my little corner of the world. A woman holding a guy's arm. I knew a gal once. Haven't spoken to her in years, but she's still very dear to me. We were getting ready to go to grab something to eat, and she skipped over to me and grabbed my arm with both of her hands, and I'll tell you, it sent me. It wasn't sexual, it just the affection that came across, and that little gesture was phenomenal. Hold his arm. And as far as touching, yeah, it's not just me that gets this. Recently, For the People came out with a post called A Rare Breed. Sometimes there are posts that they put out there, it just speaks to me. I mean, it feels like it was made specifically for me. And I'm sure some of you out there feel the same way. This is one of those videos. And in that video, it shows these two presumably superheroes, a guy and a gal, standing on something, looking out across what seems to be water, looking out into the city. And as the film is running, the video is running, the gal just leans over and touches her shoulder to the guy's shoulder. That's it. Something just so innocent, so simple. It just reinforces the affection that she has for him. Guys don't want respect. If they want respect, they would go to McDonald's over and over again because you walk in, yes, sir. Can I help you, sir? Yes, sir. Absolutely, sir. Of course, sir. Anything else, sir? I don't want respect. What do guys want? Well, again, let's go to Q for some guidance. Slide 36. They have a song out in Cheap Trick. I Want You to Want Me is the title of the song. And on slide 37, I'm going to read you the chorus. I want you to want me. I need you to need me. I'd love you to love me. I'm begging you to beg me. What men want? Right there. Q, Cheap Trick, summed it up in four lines. Next, let's remember that we're not looking for perfection, right? The connection doesn't have to be perfection. So you don't have to run away and do all this inner work, whatever. There's a certain level that you have to get to, absolutely, right? Because I actually ran into one of the fractals of my twin last year. But she was hooked up to all the wrong shit. She was, Oracle girl this and Oracle girl that. And she had an issue with integrity and, lying and all kinds of stuff. And she would do things and not involve me. Like she would invoke I don't know, some ridiculous god. And I didn't want that. And she knew I didn't want that, and I didn't believe in it, and she would do it anyway. And it got to a point where I just said, enough, I'm leaving, I'm done. You know, and she also had an alien inside of her that she needs to clear out. Woke up one morning, her leg was touching mine, and I could literally feel the energy rushing out of my body, out of my leg, and into hers. Sorry, you need to do some inner work and raise up to a certain level. Don't have to be perfect, but you need to at least stop stealing my energy, or at least stop the aliens in you from stealing the energy, right? And be honest, a little authentic. But anyway, back to Mermaid and Q. In one of the shows, Mermaid said that, quote, I'm trying to quote as close as possible, right? So I have quotes around it. But I believe Mermaid said, he, Q, was eating clams and living out of a van when I met him. But I just knew I had to be with this man. She wasn't perfect and didn't have full self-awareness when she traveled across several countries, according to her own words, with, I believe she said, four children just to be with Q, because she knew. So the point here is, you don't have to be perfect, guys and gals. Just, you know, get rid of the aliens, get to a certain level. Look to CLS for the twin flame clearings as guidance, you know, if nothing else to work on. Listen to his shows. Do a search for those specific clearings or those topics in the archive radio shows. When he talks about it and he does the clearings for those issues, it will still work up to three times, even though it happened, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And it's all free. And if you want, you could just put it on low when you sleep at night, and the harmonics will help you. So there are things that you can do to help yourself that are free. What to look for. Traits that I would recommend you look for in your twin flame. And here I speak from personal experience. Look for the one that makes your heart burn when you think about her or him. Look for the one that makes a tear run from your eye by just looking at her picture, because your spirit recognizes her spirit and misses her. Hopefully, she's not living in her head or in the past or looking for answers outside of herself, but is emotionally available. If I have one Achilles heel in my relationships now, I continue to be drawn to people that are not emotionally available. And if you don't understand what that term means, that's something else you need to look into, because that came with all the codependency and cluster Bs and psychopath checklists, you know, learning, education, emotionally available. And there could be many reasons why they're not. I wish you all the best. And then finally, the last slide. There was a video that I saw that brings all of this together. It was on Instagram by, and I put the link at the bottom of the slide. Really, folks, I really encourage you to get this link and go listen to this video, because my description here does not do it justice. This little short video talks about acts of kindness. And he talks about how a study was done. And it showed that acts of kindness increases their serotonin level in an individual, as well as boosts the immune system in not just the giver of the act of kindness, but also the receiver of that act of kindness and the observer of that act. And the act of kindness can be as simple as a smile. Smiling to a stranger raises the serotonin level and boosts the immune system of the person that's smiling, the stranger that saw it, and anybody else that saw that happen. What is serotonin? It's often referred to as the happy chemical due to its influence on well-being. And in that post, down below, there's they wrote certain words, and I'm going to just read two lines to you on this. It says, true kindness isn't just about being good to others. It starts with being deeply kind to yourself. True healing isn't just about what you eat or practice. It's about what you allow, what you tolerate, and what you walk away from. I encourage you to go and look at those slides. Learn the traits of people that are most likely have a dark alien in them, but at the very least have very deep issues that haven't faced and resolved their shadows. Walk away from them. Stand up for yourself. Be a bard rising for yourself. Draw a line in the sand. Protect yourself. Doesn't always mean walking around or jogging with a firearm strapped to your chest or pointing out stuff on a video. It's walking away from things that do not resonate with you, let alone that are actually harmful to you and your emotional and mental well-being. Be good to yourselves and be good to each other. Find ways to perform acts of kindness. Everybody can do it. It's free. It costs you nothing. Just show your teeth. Smile. That's all. A simple smile. Start with that. And I assure you, I'm preaching to the choir on this one, as they say, because I need to learn to smile more than getting better. And it's a whole lot easier, these last few months, year or so. But there's certainly room for improvement. So don't think that I'm standing here on a pedestal saying that I'm perfect, because I'm far from it. I'm not perfect, and I'm no expert in anything, as I've said repeatedly. But I believe that this slide deck will help us get better and help us improve whatever relationship we have, including our relationships with ourselves. So thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. Thank you to all my subscribers. I truly, truly appreciate it. I'm enjoying this show, and I really appreciate and respect all of you for taking the time to listen to me. It means a lot to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Next week, stay tuned. I'm going to show you all how JFK, i.e. Q, was wrong. With that concludes this show. I love you all. Be good to yourselves and be good to each other. VBS, thank you for being such a great host. Thank you for putting up my slide decks on time for all the different shows. I appreciate it. And please take it away.
Whoa!